More on thinking through problem next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michael.
And it's great to be back with you, Barry. This is a very important topic, continuation of yesterday's show. So I'm really glad to be discussing this, especially with our class coming up. Those of you who may want to join us as we teach a class on the United States Constitution and the implications for your life and how to use the Constitution as a tool. That's the most important thing that we do in this class, Barry. A lot of people teach classes about the Constitution. We teach you to use the Constitution as a tool, as a practical application. And if you'd like to join us as we prepare to teach classes in Mount Vernon, Ohio and Marengo, Ohio, then please come out to www.principledpolicy.com. You can join us. We have a number of people. Both venues are going to have a large class, not super large, but large enough that there will be a lot of class interaction. And believe me, Barry, everybody interacts in this class. You know that. I know that. People who have taken it before know it. They're going to learn things that they've never heard before. They're going to learn things that are going to help them deal with getting out there, getting with the Tea Party groups, getting with their congresspeople, with their senators, with the president, and with their local people, county commissioners, city council members, mayors, township trustees, and really deal with them with how they are being dealt with. And part of the reason is this book we're going to be discussing today. But again, go out to www.principledpolicy.com. The classes will begin Friday, March 1st, 3:30 to 5 in Mount Vernon and 7 to 9 in Marengo. And the locations and everything are right there on the website.
Well, Chuck, one of the things that we're trying to do when we do this radio program is try to help you think through these issues. And we oftentimes use hypotheticals, but oftentimes we pull right from the pages of real life and real politics when we're making these examples and helping people think through it. Now, this is something we started on yesterday. We were talking, we're pulling an article from Dr. Joel McDermott of American Vision at AmericanVision.org called The Smiling Politician. Now, he gives an example here, Chuck, that I've been reading, and it's absolutely dead spot on because I've seen it happen. And he talks about this whole a real life example, and he talked about attending a town hall meeting over the issue of a toll road that was being proposed in their county. Now, I live in an area where just across the river from us in West Virginia, a road project is going on, and well, they ran out of money, Chuck, so they didn't quite get it done. So some of the state officials decided that it'd be a good idea to put a toll on the road and to convince the contractor to front the money in exchange for getting the tolls back for a certain number of years. Well, the people in the county where the toll road would be and would have the most impact on weren't really happy with the idea. And based on what McDermott writes in this article, this sounds almost exactly like what happened in this community. That basically, the county commissioners knew it was unpopular, so they scheduled a public meeting at the farthest location away from the population center they could possibly find and set right around the time people would be just getting home from work or just sitting down to dinner. Well, just like in McDermott's story, it didn't work that well for the county commissioners in this county. And he says in this that 300 people turned out. Well, they had about 300 or 400 at this meeting. And basically that what happened was they tried to do all these tricks, parliamentary procedures, limiting people to 2 minutes, saying they'll take questions, but only if they're written down and they won't take any questions from the floor that are at the microphone, all those kind of things. And Chuck, this is the way it happens. What happens is these are what are called facilitated meetings. They have a predetermined outcome. And what they hope is to plant a few people or a few questions in the audience to guide the imagination and guide the conversation over to where they can have the spotlight. Well, in McDermott's article, basically, they put a guy up there who's a local guy, and he starts talking, but somebody in the back gets tired. And of course, this is how you break up a facilitated meeting, is somebody doesn't play along with the script. And so somebody in the back of the room yells out, "Get to the point. And stop wasting our time." Well, that's exactly what they were trying to do, was to have this guy eat up all the time with a filibuster. It's sort of like what they tried to do with the Chuck Hagel nomination, which sadly on today as we're recording this, we find that Chuck Hagel has now been nominated to be the new Secretary of Defense.
I mean, he confirmed.
Yeah. He was, excuse me, not nominated. He was confirmed as the new Secretary of Defense. So another black spot on our country. But going back to McDermott, he basically says that, oh, they kept saying after they kept getting more and more opposition from locals who knew what they were talking about, oh, there's not going to be a toll road. There's not going to be a toll road. Well, they did this for long enough until a lot of people left. Well, when there's only maybe about 10% of the crowd left, then somebody says, wait a minute, let me get this clear. You're saying for certain there's not going to be a major road running through our backyards. And the guy, the chairman of the commissioner, said, I didn't say that. There's not going to be a toll road. The state may still decide to build a highway and take your property.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there we go. Now we're getting down to the real question.
This is also how Kasich, as we talked about yesterday, this is also how Kasich is playing the game with Medicaid expansion. It's exactly the same thing. The language is slightly different. It doesn't matter. The game is exactly the same. Oh, no. We're not going to do that. We're going to do this instead. Now, you know that the facilitators know that the people are there. They're up in arms about a toll road. And they're really up in arms about any kind of road, but they're really up in arms about a toll road. Well, we're not going to put a toll road through. We're not going to put a toll road through. We're not going to put a toll road through. And what do they hear? How does that translate in the minds of the people who are so livid about the road? We're not putting the road through.
Exactly.
And that's why the question. And what does the chairman say? It's not just, oh, we're not going to do that. Oh, no. That's not what I said. I never said that. I said there's not going to be a toll road. Meanwhile, most of the people have left the room. He feels perfectly safe in saying that. Now, the same thing is going on in state government. Well, we didn't say that. What we said was this. Basically, we're getting all this free money for 3 years, and then after that, the government will pick up 90% of the cost. Well, who pays that 90% of the cost? People from the state of Ohio do.
That's right.
And now, let me ask you a question, Barry. Let's just say that Ohio decided to do this program and opt out of the federal program. Ha ha, you can't do that. Wouldn't it be a little more efficiently run at the state level than it would be having to go to the feds first? They scrape off their take for their bureaucracy and then send the money back to us. That's what's always bugged me about these schemes. So what I need to do then, what you're telling me I need to do is collect the money at the federal level, run it through the bureaucracy where about 75 or more percent basically gets scraped off in administrative costs, and then you're going to send me back that money, attenuated as it is, for me to use. How about we just keep it here instead? Which, by the way, was the original tax structure in the United States Constitution. The states decided what was a great thing to spend money on, what wasn't. And in fact, things like healthcare were left to private entities with mostly a familial responsibility. Familial first, church second, local charitable organizations third, local governments, usually counties and that kind of thing, fourth. And it virtually never got to the state level or to the federal level. But we're not seeing that these days. It immediately starts out as a federal responsibility, which it's not. And then the money filters down through the states with all the restrictions and attenuations to it. So when you get to the end, somebody doesn't like the way that their federal grant money got handed to them. Some welfare recipient doesn't like the way his money got handed. And he goes to the federal court and says, well, it was federal money to start with. And I need you to direct them to send me more money or money in a different way. And sure enough, you'll find a judge who will say, throwing caution and legal precedents to the wind and say, yeah, you're right. We need to do it that way. Which is why you get all these goofy decisions. So McDermott's basically laying it out flat and solid. Here it is. This is how it works. And you need to educate yourself. Now, I like the fact that all it took was this guy that said, get to the point, quit wasting our time. And what he did was he exposed the facilitator in the room.
That's right.
And once you expose the facilitator for what he is and show that he's actually working for the other side, he's useless. He's useless, especially if you have people in the room who know how this works. Because very often you'll get broken up into groups. well, you work on this and you work on this and you work on this. And what they do is they'll give you a series of false either ors. Okay, here's what you work on. It's either this or this, or this or this, or this or this. Well, the first thing you need to do is get yourself appointed chairman of the group. And by basically saying, I'll chair this group, you can usually do that. And when you do that, you say, you know what? Neither of these solutions are practical. Yes, but they told us that this is what we had to do. No, no, no. We're going to think outside the box. That really
right.
gets me. That,
and that's the old idea of when you're giving choice A or choice B, the answer is other.
Yes, we're going to think outside the box and we're going to come up with a more practical solution. And everybody sort of says, hey, that's a great idea. Isn't that what this meeting's all about? Well, no, it isn't. They wanted you to either come up with this solution or that solution, then either one would be the one that they would want to deal with. What your group does is comes up with a solution that completely fries what they want to do. And suddenly you'll find things like, as our good friend Tom DeWeese from the American Policy Center had happened to him at a facilitated meeting where his group did this. The facilitator immediately called an end to the meeting and said, this group is not coming to the decision that we wanted, and therefore we're adjourning.
Well, at least they were transparent with the fact that they came in with a predisposed agenda and wanted a particular outcome, and when they weren't getting it, they just quit.
They just quit, yeah.
Now, of course, what they would do is to reconvene somewhere else at a time when people can't get there, so that they can get to their predetermined position.
Yeah, what will probably happen in this case that McDermott's talking about, and he admits this openly, he says the highway will probably go through because, quote-unquote, the governor wants it. I was not surprised when the answer is what he says, but the fact he seems shocked someone would intimate the question, well, I know I think we need to support our governor. We may need his help someday. That's exactly why you're seeing some government types who are normally conservative suddenly lining up behind Kasich, because they think that they may need him for some other piece of pork barrel legislation for their own district. And if they don't get behind him, then he'll say, yep, you did me over on this Medicaid thing, so I'm not helping you on this. This is how it works.
And you know what? I just have to harken back to another memory of mine, Charles, when I worked for a legislator in the House who was given that option of, well, if you'll do this for us, then we can get your bill through. And my boss at the time looked the leader straight in the eye and said, if that's what it takes to get my bill through, kill it right now, because I'm never voting for a tax increase, because that's what it was. They were asking for a tax increase in order to green light passing the piece of legislation that the person who I worked for was trying to get passed. Now, did that piece of legislation ever get passed? Oh, you bet it did, because it was something that people wanted. But it wasn't done at the cost of trading off your principles or taking the cheese, as Joel McDermott would say.
Let's think about this. John Kasich has shown himself to be a master at trading the important for the mundane. And by that, I mean he has continually bragged that he balanced the budget, I think, in 1996, when in fact he did not balance the budget. What he did was exactly what he's doing in Ohio, and that is pushing things offline, off budget, pushing the payoffs off to different budget years. So it looks like, in fact, how did we turn $7 billion in deficit into $1.9 million in surplus? Well, by not paying our bills.
Yeah.
It's sort of like paying off one credit card with another one at a higher interest rate. When the bill does come due, it's going to be a lot more than $7 billion closer to $9 billion, because that surplus is fake. He did this in 96, and what did he trade? He traded a fake balanced budget by promising to vote for gun control. This is why he has a lousy rating with the NRA and a couple of political action committees on guns, because our good governor isn't so good on guns, and he's also not so good on the economy. So what is he good at? He's good at expanding government and making it look like it's not costing anything. And he's doing it by dangling the cheese, and some of us are taking it. Some of us are telling you about it in hopes that you won't take it. But I think McDermott has some other important ideas at the end of this that we need to talk about. But of course, we're out of time, as usual. as we get going in this. So I think we'll finish up our discussion on Friday.
Perhaps tomorrow.
So join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.